Woo!
All right. So I took my kids and my wife out kayaking yesterday. It was a terrible day to go kayaking. It was 55 degrees out. Like, literally, my kids were sticking their hands and feet in the water, and I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we're trying to get warm, because the water was warmer than the air was. But we had paid to go, and so we thought we better go. It was kayaking on the Kentucky River, and we kayaked through the Palisades. Just beautiful. These cliffs going up, like, up into the sky. Just beautiful to be on the water. But it was 6 miles on this water. And once you got in it, there was no stopping until you got to the end. And so, we're kayaking and we're going. I'm like, if you stop, we'll die, to my kids. You know, like, we gotta keep going. And we're kayaking. And they're like, Dad, please stop. I was like, we gotta go. And so we're kayaking and gotta keep paddling the whole time. And I'd taken my son Simon, who was in a tandem kayak with me, up near the kind of shore edge. There was a palisade right there, and then we'd gotten past that, and we're kind of up. There's trees and just beauty all next to us, and we're pretty close to the shore, and I wasn't paying attention. He wasn't paying attention, and all of a sudden, we hit something that we had no idea was there. There was this rock that just jutted up under the water, and our kayak, we have a little bit of momentum going, and our kayak just goes, whoom, hits it and goes up on top of the rock, and all of a sudden we lose all stability. It starts rocking back and forth like this, and Simon, like, he starts wanting to rock. He's like, woo-hoo-hoo! And he didn't really do that, did you? But it was terrifying, because in my mind I thought, oh man, we're gonna lose it. We're going in the water. We're gonna go in the drink, and then we're gonna be wet the whole time, and it's 55 degrees. We're gonna die out here, right? And so we're stuck up there. My other son, Peter, he was with us, and Peter, like, looks back, cause I kinda screamed, like, ah! Like, kinda real high-pitched scream, and Peter looks back to make sure that we're okay. And I'm like, Peter, stop! We need you to stay away! And Peter's like, bye, I'll see you guys later! Cause he couldn't hear me. And he just took off, and it took us 4 or 5 minutes to get unhooked off this rock, because our kayak had kind of gotten stuck on it. And I'm pushing, and the whole time I'm like, Simon, don't move an inch, because if you move, it felt like we were, like, almost on a tightrope. Like, it was that hairy of a deal. And I thought about this morning's sermon and how what I'm preaching about is kind of like those times when you felt like you might just go in the water. You ever had one of those moments for you where life was going along pretty good and everything was all right, and then, I don't know, like, a pandemic hits. And like, all of a sudden you can't leave your house, and you're stuck there, and some of you, it's been the first time that you've literally seen human faces, like, in person in the last year. And all of us have been paying the price for that in our souls, right? And we were stuck on these rocks, and we just were waiting for the time when we get unstuck, and we're all so excited to be unstuck that we're like, what? Like, we're like burning masks and stuff. I mean, some of you, the pandemic brought other worries for you. Your business was going along so well. You had started a business a few years back, and it was just booking. And then all of a sudden, the pandemic hit, and clients stopped calling, and everything changed. And you've had to pivot, and like you are struggling to make it, and you're just hoping that you can hang on until things get better and things get back to normal. Some of you had relationships that got strained during this past year. And honestly, like, there's people in your life that you haven't talked to because you got in such big fights over politics or over other cultural issues, or you got mad about masks, or there was some kind of fight about vaccinations or whatever it was. And there's people in your life who you don't even talk to anymore because you can't talk to them, because you can't stand them, because it drives you nuts. What's the thing that has you worried and fearful in this life? Is it your relationship? Like, being together so much has made you realize that you're not sure you want to be together. And he's saying things and you're saying things and you're just at your wit's end. Or maybe your house is falling apart and the foundation is out and your water heater broke and you're just like, I don't have money for this, and the bills are piling up and you don't know what to do. What is it for you? Here's the reality. If we were honest, I could go on all day with what worries us as a man. Some of you are mad at me right now. You're like, dang it, Kent. I was having like a good morning. I got a donut on the way in, and you're bringing up all this junk. Like, stop it. I'm done. I'm leaving. I'm out. Because we're just so overwhelmed with worry and anxiety and fear. And while there's been a little reprieve, like as things have started to kind of appear normal, the reality is, you know as well as I do, even if your life has been going well, it's all just right around the corner. Could I just give you some perspective real quick? Could I just give you some perspective? Because this is something that is not new. The author of the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, he's King David's son. Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived. And this is what the scripture says. And this is what he said in Ecclesiastes 1:9. Listen to this. Solomon said this, and this is good advice for all of us who live in this moment, this period of time where everything just seems so like full of vitriol and anger, and there's so much angst, and there's so much in our world that makes you just go, that you're dying on the inside. This Solomon speaks to us these words of wisdom. Listen, what has been, it'll be again. Solomon's saying, you think you live in this really unique period of time, but the reality is what has been, it'll be again. And then he says, what has been done will be done again. And then he says these words that have been quoted so many times by so many people, people who don't even know they're in the Bible, that there is nothing new under the sun. Solomon's not saying that iPhones existed like hundreds of years ago. What he's saying is that ideas and concepts and the wickedness that happens in the world and the good that happens in the world, there is nothing, none of that is new under the sun. It cracks me up when I hear people talking about how bad our world is getting. Like, we'll talk about, there is all kinds of terrible things in our world, right? And we'll talk about them like they've never happened. You know, our world is just going to hell in a handbasket. It's the worst, you know? And can I just real quickly tell you something? Do you know what it was like during the day and age that Jesus lived? If you went back 2,000 years ago to the first century, this is what you'd find. See if any of it sounds familiar. There was incredible racism in Jesus' day. Like incredible racism. Now it was different than our racism. It was against Jewish people. And there were things, I talked about this several weeks ago, maybe even months ago now, but there were people that would, like people in the leadership of Rome who would incite the Jewish people. They would try to kind of pester them and pick on them to get them to rise up and try to fight back just so they could kill them. Just so they could attack them. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, right? Like, They would do these terrible things just so they could be terrible back to these people. There was incredible racism. You would, if you were walking, not just racism towards the Jewish people, but the Jewish people were also racist towards Samaritans. And so it continued on from group to person to group, and people weren't treated well, and they were just treated terribly by each other. You can read about some of this stuff documented in the scriptures. There was a soldier. Did you know a Roman soldier could walk up to you and he could force you to carry his pack a mile for him? Just force you. Didn't matter what you were doing. You were in the middle of working in your garden or whatever. He could come up. He's tired. He'd say, hey, you carry my pack for me a mile. And guess what? You had to do it. There were these guys called tax collectors. And tax collectors, the way they made their money was by overtaxing you. Imagine if the IRS, if they told those guys who worked for the IRS, we're not going to pay you anything. The way you get paid is by overtaxing. Like whatever you can get above and beyond the actual tax they owe, it's yours to keep. Can you imagine the level of corruption? I mean, how many of you just love a good tax already? Like, man, I just love me a good tax. No! But imagine if there was that level of corruption in the tax system. We already don't like it. These people were being taxed to the point where financially it was devastating. I mean devastating. I mean like you are looking through your cupboard and you're trying to figure out what you're going to eat for the night, and you're trying to decide which person in your family isn't going to eat tonight because you don't have enough food in your pantry to feed them. And you're laying in bed at night worried about how you're going to feed your kids, and you haven't eaten for days because you've been feeding them. And you're not sure if you're going to get money this week or not. You're going to go out and look for some day labor jobs. Did you know during Jesus' time they didn't have social security programs? There was no disability. There was no unemployment. That's the job that you had as a day laborer. You got wounded and you couldn't work anymore. You know what your job was after that? Sir, please Please, could I have some money? Please, I've got to feed my family, sir. Please. He became a beggar. If your husband died, wives, if your husband died, you had two choices. You could sell yourself or you could beg. Can you even begin to imagine that world? Our world is going to hell in a handbasket. Their world was terrible. Their leaders would kill one another so that they could take their place. I know in our world people kill each other with their words, but they would physically kill one another. They would kill each other. A brother who's in leadership would kill his brother so he could take his brother's wife as his wife. It was a terrible, terrible time to live. And so it is no wonder that in that moment in history, a moment that I would say is not 100% dissimilar from ours, there's a lot of similarity. There's a lot of reasons for us to be worried and have all this anxiety and fear and whatnot. But in that world that they were in, do you know what they turned to in those moments? Because the reality for them was fear and worry was nothing new. Do you know what they turned to? They turned back to the scripture. They turned to God's words. Because the Jewish people had become reliant upon God. They began to rely on the fact that he was going to come through for them. There's stories. This is why if you read the Old Testament Jewish stories, there's always kind of this thread of hope. And actually, I think the thread is linked all the way through to Jesus. But because all these other stories of hope are pointing out how the real hope bringer is going to come into the world. But there's just this thread of hope. The Egyptians keep the Israelites slaves for over 400 years. 400 years they're praying for God to bring them out of slavery, and it doesn't happen. When do you give up? 350? 359? Over 400 years they pray, and guess what? God sends a deliverer to come and rescue them. He listens to them. And so we jump back to the period of Jesus' time so that we can jump back to Isaiah to look at the hunt, how God has been after you all this time and wants you to be after him. And so this is what would happen is these Israelites, they're laying in bed and they would quote, because they would memorize scripture. They weren't like us. They didn't have on their phone that they could just pull it up. They would quote it. They would be laying in bed and they'd quote these scriptures and they'd remember them and they'd bring them up in their heads. And this one, I want to just take you to one out of Isaiah 35, and I want to show you the power of this passage for these people 2,000 years ago and what I believe could be power for you and I in this moment in our history right now. Is that good with you guys? Everybody just say yes, Kent, and make me feel bad. See, thanks you guys. I appreciate it over there. It's really nice. All right, Isaiah 35. We're going to be in Isaiah 35. If you want to open up your Bibles, you can jump there or look this up later. Listen to what God says to them. Say to those with fearful hearts. Anybody in here? Hopefully I've raised up a little bit of your fear. You're like, I hate your guts for it, Kent, but you got a little fear in you? This is what he says to you. Be strong. Do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. It was messages like this that kept Israel as a nation, kept them through some of the most terrible events in history. It is this message that no matter what you're going through, no matter what terrible situation you're going through, God is coming. He is coming. And for hundreds and hundreds of years, Isaiah, remember, this is 630 years before that he's writing this stuff. 600 years, they're going back to it and they're looking for it. And actually, the Israelites began to call this person that would come and bring the divine retribution and the vengeance of God. Do you know what they began to call him? They were looking for what we now know as the Messiah. That the Messiah would come. He would come as God's king on earth, and he would set up an earthly kingdom, and he would reign, and he would bring God's vengeance against the Romans, or whoever was oppressing them at the time. He would bring God's retribution against them. But I want you to listen very closely to how Isaiah describes this person. Because what the Jewish people tended to do was focus on the first part and miss the second part. Listen to it. Isaiah 35, 5 through 6. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Now, I know, we talked about this last week. I know that you guys know who did these kind of things, right? They didn't. And this is a prophecy that's 630 years old to them when this prophecy is being, like, fulfilled. It is a powerful thing that Isaiah is saying these things, but they have no clue, they have no way of understanding what it would even mean for people who are blind for their eyes to start seeing. For people who are deaf for their ears to start hearing. Then the lame will leap like a deer. I love that picture. This is how I've always pictured when Jesus healed lame people. I can't do it, but I picture them clicking their heels together. You know, I would fall on my face if I did. But after them dancing a jig, don't you? Like, if you got your legs back, wouldn't you be like, woo-hoo-hoo? And you'd like start doing one of those Irish dances, like, whoop-a-doop-a-doop. I can't do it. But wouldn't you do it? I'd try at least. They'd leap like a deer. And the mute person, the person who hasn't been able to speak, what do? They shout for joy. I think that one's interesting because they have to learn language at the same time, right? Like learn how to use their tongue. Like it is a complete and absolute miracle. Listen, water will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. I grew up in a desert climate out in western Kansas. If you ever go through there, it's total desert. They at one point planted 1 million trees because this was in the 1800s. They thought it would turn it into a rainforest. All the trees died. It's like, what? What? It was a desert. Can you imagine in a desert? You guys have seen deserts. Imagine streams just beginning to burst forth from the ground. Jesus called himself that he would bring living water. Remember that? So, we're in the middle of this, we're reading all this, we know that God is going to bring vengeance and retribution, but we also know that he's going to come and he's going to heal blind people and he's going to heal the deaf. And so in the middle of all this, if we jump back forward to where Jesus lives, 630 years after Isaiah writes this, do you know what's happening in the middle of all this? Jesus has a second cousin. His name is John the Baptist. I like to call him Johnny B, all right? Johnny B is, he has been preaching. He's kind of harsh when he preaches. I mean, he's tough when he preaches. And Johnny B has been getting the wrong people mad at him. And Johnny gets put in jail because he has gotten upset and preached against Herod, who is taking his brother's wife as his own wife. And so Johnny B has gotten put in prison because he's preached against the king of the Jews. Herod was the king of the Jews at the time. And so here Herod is put in prison by this king who's not really the king, but he claims to be the king. And he knows that Jesus, he thinks is the king, isn't doing anything about it. And so do you know what Johnny B does? He sends messengers and he says, are you the one? I mean, really? Are you the one? These are not his words, but I think this is written behind this. Where's the vengeance? Where's the retribution? You may not know this, but Johnny B's days are numbered being in this prison cell. He is going to eventually end up with his head being removed from his body and put on a platter to satisfy this little girl who danced kind of a seductive dance for the king. And the king said, I'll give you whatever you want. And her mom, it's just a sick story. Her and her mom say, I want the head of John the Baptist. On a platter. And so to satisfy this sick story, John the Baptist will be murdered, his head removed from his body, and brought as a token gift. And he's in prison. Not prison like ours, but prison where like it's dark and it's dank and it's dirty and they don't feed you. If you want food, somebody that loves you has to bring it to you. And if you want to go to the bathroom, there's just a little hole that you use. And John is saying to Jesus, if you're the guy, any time now, like, let's get this thing going. Let's get this party happening. And I want you to hear what Jesus replies with. Listen. Luke chapter 7, verse 22. So he replied to the messengers, go back and report to John what you've seen and heard. The blind receive sight. The lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cleansed. The deaf hear. The dead are raised. And the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Here is Johnny B, and all he can see is he's looking for the guy who will bring the divine retribution. He will bring the divine vengeance of God. And what Jesus says is go back and tell Johnny B that all of the prophecy is being fulfilled. I am here. I am he. I didn't come like you expected, right? I didn't come like you expected. You know what they expected? Listen to this. It sounded like God was going to bring a rifle. But instead he brought a stethoscope, right? It sounded to them like he was coming to go to war. It sounded like he was coming to attack, to push off, to fight against, but that's not what he came for. Not in the way that they thought. And really, this passage from Isaiah, it doesn't even make sense until Jesus. Because what did Jesus do? Jesus brought vengeance and retribution, but he brought it against sin. He brought it against the evil one. He brought healing to anyone who would turn to him. Right? But they missed it. They missed it because they were looking for something that he was never going to bring. It was so much deeper. You could overthrow Rome, right? But there's always somebody next in line. There's always some other violent perpetrator that's coming. But when you overthrow the sin inside of a person, when I talked to my buddy about baptism, I told him that I think one of the primary things a Christian is supposed to do, I believe that we all have free will, but I believe one of the primary things you and I are supposed to do is to submit our free will to God and become wholly possessed by him. And I mean H-O-L-Y. I believe we're to have a holy possession where the Spirit of God overtakes us and possesses us and works his will in us. And we say, not my will, but your will. That only happens when you find true freedom from sin. When God rescues you. And so when Jesus came, he didn't come just to set up this kingdom. He came to set like an earthly kingdom. He came to set up a much more subversive kingdom. A kingdom that lives inside of you and lives inside of me. And it walks into every single room that we walk into. Every single day. That is powerful. So maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking, Kent, that's really neat. But what's the point for me, right? What's the point? Because remember I brought up all of your fears at the beginning and I got you a little mad at me and you're like, oh my gosh, Wagner, right? I'm never coming back, you big jerk. What's the point? Do you remember that passage at the very beginning, Isaiah 35:4? Can we put that back up here? Thanks, Wendy. Say to those with fearful hearts. See, I don't know if you know this, but God speaks through his word, and he is speaking directly to you. He's speaking, he's saying, if you have the fearful heart, he's looking at you, and he's speaking to you, and he's saying, say to those with fearful hearts, be strong. Do not fear. Your God will, what's the word? Come. Your God will come. Some of you are so afraid. And can I, this, I had, as I was writing the sermon, I had these two questions that I wanted to ask you. These are the questions for the sermon. You ready? Why do we still struggle with fear? I mean, really, when you know the story, you know who God is, you know who Jesus is, why do we still struggle with fear? Even greater, why does worry still control our hearts? Why are you so worried? So everybody just take a pen, put it in the sermon right there, all right? Pause. We're going to hold right there because I'm writing the sermon, all right? So, and as I write it, you may not know this, but I write my sermons 3 weeks out, all right? So 3 weeks ago, I'm writing these questions, and I really pray through it. I work through it. It's kind of a weird thing. I mean, Saturday night, this is why I can't do things on Saturdays in the evenings, because Saturday night, I pull these sermons back out and I go through the whole thing and I work it out. You may not know this, but in July, I actually take a sabbatical in July from preaching and I spend the entire month. We're going to have really great preachers for you, some local guys who I'm excited for you to hear God speak through them. But in July, I take that whole month. I don't not work. I spend the entire month praying through every single week of the entire year and mapping out what scriptures I'm going to preach on, what the topic is going to be. I write like several paragraphs about every single sermon for the entire week or the entire year. I do that all in July, and it's this big process. So imagine a year ago in July, I'm writing about this week that I'm going to be preaching here. 3 weeks ago, I'm writing this sermon, and I get done on the particular day that I'm working on this. I finish for the evening, and I write these two questions. And what were the two questions? Here they are. Let me open it back up in my notes. Why do we still struggle with fear, and why does worry still control our hearts, right? So imagine, this is 3 weeks ago. I write that. I close my computer, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go home. I'll finish the sermon tomorrow. I go home. Next morning, I'm getting ready, and I get this text to David and I from Mike. And Mike says, David, can I meet with you guys today? I have some important news to share with you guys. And my heart just sunk, man. I knew what it was going to be. Nothing has intimated that. I just knew. Like, Mike's so talented. And he's so good. You can ask Jenny. I told her, I kept making stuff up. I was like, maybe it's this. Like, it'll be this really good thing. And he's just telling, you know, he's people of the worship team or whatever. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out something that would be, help me get through the day. And so I couldn't work on the sermon all day. Like, I was just struggling. And Mike comes into our office at 3 o'clock that afternoon. He rips the Band-Aid off, just tells us, you know, it's crazy. My brother-in-law, who's in ministry, had been here that Sunday before, and he said, man, that worship leader, Mike, is really good. Are you ever afraid he's going to leave? You know what I said? I said, I can't really see that happening unless, like, a Southland or somebody asked him to come. For real, I said that. The Sunday, I was like, oh, it's my fault. It's all my fault. So I get the news about Mike, and I couldn't work on the sermon that day, and I opened up the scripture that night because I was worried and fearful. I was thinking, man, God is like, look, would you guys just pause and look around this room? I wish if you were online, you could see it's full, man. Like it's summer and we should probably be adding some chairs. That's crazy in a church. That's crazy. It's amazing. God is doing these incredible things and there's all this momentum, and I started worrying him instantly. Like, I'm just worrying and my tendency is, I don't know if you're like this, my tendency is to take control and fix it. Normally, I'm doing all this stuff and I start working and I start blah and trying to fix it all and make it all happen. And so I just told Jesus, I was like, I don't want to do that this time. I want to seek you first. And so I went to the scriptures and, I started reading, and for some reason, I had forgotten that I was in Luke chapter 7 for this sermon, and God took me to the beginning of Luke chapter 7. And I saw that what's really crazy is next month I was supposed to spend the whole month on Luke chapter 7, and I didn't know that, and so I totally ruined that sermon series, but I've got a really great one for you, so come back next month. Luke chapter 7, I went back to the beginning and I read something I want to read you in a moment. But before I do that, I want to tell you what happened to me the next day. I came in after God had kind of walked me through some of this, and I still, you know how you can like get past your fear and then the next day it grabs a hold of you again. I'd kind of done that, and I walked back in and I open up my computer and my sermon and I read these words again. Why do we struggle with fear? Why does worry still control our hearts? Oh man, God is good, right? Like, just like, kakoosh right in the heart, like, ah, twisting it, like, it was like God was just, maybe you needed this sermon, I don't know, but it felt like it was written just for me. For that moment, a year ago in July, 3 weeks ago, I'm writing this, and right in that day, the day after I wrote that question, Mike tells me, and I read it the next day, and God just uses those questions to unearth something in me. And I went back to the passage that he had brought me to the night before. This is Luke chapter 7. This is earlier. Remember, we were at Luke, I think, chapter 7, verse 22 earlier. We're going to Luke chapter 7, verse 6. Now, here's what after studying this a little bit, I think Luke is actually kind of putting these two passages side by side so you can see the differences between Johnny B., and how he's reacting to Jesus and how he's not sure. And he should be the most sure, but he's not. And then you have this guy who should be the most unsure, but he's not. Listen to it. Luke chapter 7, verse 6 through 10. He is Jesus, was not far from the house. The house was a centurion's house. A centurion is a soldier who's in charge of 100 other soldiers, all right? He's a guy who's got some stuff, some oomph under him. He has sent for Jesus because he has a servant who is sick and dying, a servant that he really loves and cares about. And he's asked Jesus to come and heal his servant. Maybe you remember this story. Listen. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That's why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. And that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed. Good night. How would you like to have that as part of your resume? I amazed the Son of God. Right? That's powerful. He was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, now remember, this guy is a Roman. This guy is an occupier. This guy is one of the guys they think the Messiah is coming to overthrow. This is powerful stuff. This is what he said. I tell you, I've not found such great faith, even in Israel. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. This man trusted Jesus. He knew what it was like to be under authority, and he knew what it was like to wield authority, and he placed his complete and utter trust in Jesus' authority. And I'm sitting there writing this sermon in kind of a raw space, and I felt like Jesus just whispered these words to me. Kent, do you trust me? Do I really trust him? Do I really trust him? Do you really trust him? All those fears, all those worries. I mean, I can trust that my God will come through, right? I can trust that, can't I? Listen, my ability to not walk in fear, I think it's directly proportionate to my ability to place my faith in Jesus. Look, I think your ability to get rid of the fear, to get rid of the worry. Now, this isn't a sermon to say, don't work hard. This isn't a sermon to say, you can ask my wife, I've worked about 14 hours a day this whole last week because there's just a lot of stuff that we have to gear up and get ready. But I haven't been trusting in myself. I need to work hard, but my trust, my hope has been in Jesus. He's the one with all authority. He's the one that can make things happen and make things move. And I just need to ask you this question. What would happen? What would happen if you took your fears and your worries and you put them in the perspective of God's eternal kingdom? If you actually really took the time to trust him with them, and hand them over to him, and just say, "Not my will, but your will be done." Could I just ask you a question? Take whatever that big worry is that's on the top of your mind, right? Maybe you have a mother that's in a nursing home and she's not doing well, and she forgets more and more of who you are every time you see her. It just worries you. I don't get it. I actually can't even imagine how hard that would be. Take your family falling apart. Can't imagine how hard that would be. Take you losing your job. Take whatever it is. And I want to ask you to put some things in an eternal perspective, because at some point, this is going to click. A year from now, are you still going to be worried about those things? Maybe. Yeah, can't. Maybe I can see myself still being worried about that. 5 years from now, are you still worried about it? 10 years from now. 10 years from now, are you still worried about it? Maybe. Can I ask you a question? 100 years from now, is anybody worried about it? 1,000 years from now, Will anybody even know that it was on your radar? Will anybody even know that that little blip happened? Because I know somebody who will. I know somebody who cares desperately about your moment and loves you and wants to walk through it with you. And 1,000 years from now, he's still going to care about you. And he's still going to care about the terrible thing that you went through and the hurt and the pain. And he's still going to care about it, but nobody else will even know it existed. He cares. He's trustworthy. He has been given all authority in heaven and on earth. He is the only one that you can really trust. I need to confess something to you guys, because people are always like, I wish I was a part of your family. You guys go out in the wilderness and you're hiking and you're out kayaking and you're doing, like, people think we're really great parents or something. I'm just going to spill the beans. We're not. We just need to get out away from everything. Like that, this is just the truth. Like, we do want to be with our kids and we love them, but we just need to get away. Because I need to go out to creation where the birds don't care about the stresses and where the trees, they just bend in the breeze. And they don't care if Mike's leaving or if I'm staying or if I die or if something else happens. They don't care. They're just being trees and they're being birds and they're being bees and there's water that's being water, and there are stones that are as old as creation. They have been around and seen more life than I could ever hope to ever see without ever having breathed a moment. And it gives me this eternal perspective. And I'm able to step back and go, you know what? My hope is in the one who creates all this. My hope is in the one that keeps all this running. That's where my hope is. God's question for me and you, it's always been, where's your hope? Where's your hope? Is it in him? So I want to tell you a quick little secret. He didn't come to set up an earthly kingdom like we know it. He didn't come to put himself on a throne like we know it, but he did come to set up a kingdom. He did come to set up a kingdom that exists inside of my heart and inside of your heart. And guess what? He didn't even come to establish a church. You know how little a church is? 1,000 years from now, nobody will even know who Harmony Christian Church is. But do you know who they'll still be singing the praises of his name? Jesus. 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 They will sing his praises because he is the king. And they will sing his praises because you and I took it serious that he put a kingdom inside of us. And we walk, every time we walk into that vet clinic that we work at, Every time that we walk into Kroger and put on the little apron thingy that they make you wear, every time that you walk into that boardroom, every time that you walk into whatever place it is that you walk into, you bring the kingdom of God with you because you leave this place where his kingdom reigns supremely. And you walk out of those doors and you instantly enter the kingdom of the world. And you and me, we carry his kingdom everywhere we go. That's why as a church, we just want to advance his kingdom. I was thinking before first service how funny it was. Not funny, I was like, man, Mike is only leading like one of these songs at the beginning. Did you guys notice that? Were you like, come on, Mike, sing another one? And then I asked him last service, I was like, how many are you leading after? And he was like, one. And I was like, oh, you dog. Like, but it hit me. You know what hit me? I loved it. Because one, it's how Mike has always led here, through other people. But two, it's never been about him. It's never been about me. You should never say to people, come to my church so you can hear my preacher. First of all, people think preachers are crooks and messed. Like, people don't want to hear a preacher. That's the last thing they want to hear. But they do want to know about your Jesus that has changed your life and gotten you to the place that you've been to. Like, how did you get there? They need your Jesus, not your Mike, not your Kent. They need your Jesus. So I'm asking you today. I'm asking you this today. Will you go out with me and take this world for the kingdom? Can we go out and take this world for the kingdom? Because it's not about who's up on the stage. It's not about the worries and the fears that every one of us walks around with. It is about the one who holds all authority in his hand. And he did come to set up a kingdom. And good night, you get to be a part of it. How good is that? This morning, we're going to partake of communion. We're going to sing a song. And during that song, we're going to partake of communion. It's at either side of the building. There's offering boxes are there as well. This is your time to do kind of what those Israelites would do when they were laying in bed, going through those scriptures in their head. To go back to the moment where God rescued you. To take this cup, and if you've never done this before, you just take off the top and you break the little piece of bread, eat it, and it represents Jesus' body broken for you. Rip off the next layer, there's some juice there, and it's to represent Jesus' body, his blood shed for you. But this is really about you coming back to remember the King who died to set everything right for you so you could have new life and you could have hope in him. And if your hope hasn't been centered on him, why not take this time to center it on him? If you need to, I would love to talk to somebody about baptism today. I'm hoping there's somebody out there who needs to talk to somebody about Jesus. They're like, I don't even know where to start, but I'm willing to come up and talk to somebody. Come up and talk to me, or there's other folks who'll be standing up here. Or maybe you just need to pray and you need to just come and seek Jesus and say, you know what? You haven't been my hope lately. And you need to come up here and just get on your knees and pray. Nobody will bother you. Just come pray. Or maybe you need to come and talk to somebody and let somebody else know to pray for you. I've been struggling with some health concerns. I need somebody to be praying for me. Come and do that. This is your time to do some business with Jesus. Will you guys stand with us and sing this next song and take communion anytime during this?